Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, happy new year almost.
By the time anybody listens to this, it will be happy new year.
Yeah, happy new year. Welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. Host Dr. Spencer Nadolski, got my co-host Dr. Carl with me, and today we have the greatest longevity guru expert there ever was.
Oh no, don't call me a guru.
Yeah, no, you're a legit guy. We wouldn't have you on the
podcast. We'll make fun of gurus, don't worry.
Okay.
Dr. Charles
Brenner. I work on any demetabolism.
Yeah, but you're we like you because you like to call out these other gurus who make hyperbolic claims about some of the things we're going to be talking about. My brothers sent me a study about NMM supplementation. It's like, oh, is this stuff M&Ms? Legit? Should I?
Yeah. Now, if M&Ms, especially peanut M&Ms, if they were the key to longevity, I'd live forever.
Yeah, you would.
Are you an M&M person?
I am a peanut M&M. That's like my vice.
That's your
We talk so much about
sponsored by, but who's it? Mars?
Mars Company. Planters, Mr. Peanut.
No, but who does Peanut?
Well, I don't know. I'm not so sure that's an appropriate sponsorship, just because I have an addiction to
Mars. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, he sent me this thing, and I was like, I don't know a damn thing about this. We're gonna get Charles Brenner on here, so I just messaged him like, can you jump on sometime and we can talk through this? Explain to us, and then explain to our audience how
it's NAD, right?
Yeah,
all this stuff.
And I'll tell you, though, it wasn't just this that prompted us to want to get you on. I've actually had your name along with some endocrinologists who I mentioned before were authors of the Hormones and Aging Endocrine Society statement, a scientific statement from a couple of years ago. But you were a name just in the longevity scientific field on my list of guests to have. So you've been on our radar. It just happened to be this was perfect timing. Okay. So,
all right. Should I explain NAD?
Yeah.
God, yeah.
Let's go to the basics.
I mean, you know what the Krebs cycle is? The real Krebs cycle.
We all
cycle.
Had to learn it in med school.
You learn kind the Krebs of. Cycle, you forget the Krebs cycle.
Yeah.
We learned it, forgot it, and probably a lot of the people listening don't know it, I would think.
Yeah. The Krebs cycle, you learn it and you forget it. But the inner workings, of cellular energetics, by which I literally mean all cellular energetics from bacteria to, whales, is the transfer of high energy electrons, right? So here we are, free living animals. We're taking in food, protein, fat, and carbohydrate. Usually, hopefully not in powders, but we're eating food that has macronutrients in it. We break that down, and the problem that our cells have is to convert those fuels into energy, into ATP, right? And so the metabolism, the oxidation of the fuels, protein, fat, and carbohydrate, depends on four NAD coenzymes. They're called NAD plus. I don't usually pronounce the plus, but it's in there. So NAD plus, NADH, NADP plus, and NADPH. And they basically, they take high energy electrons from food and they transfer them into the mitochondria and you get ATP out of that. And then of course you have to build your whole body, right? Because you start out as one cell and then you turn into two 200 pound wrestling endocrinologists. There's a lot of, protein synthesis and lipid synthesis and carbohydrate and
a lot of fluids flowing there
into that, right? You make your whole body. You make all your bones. You make all your own muscles. You make and maintain all of your macromolecules, and that requires NADPH providing the electrons to do that. So basically, NAD coenzymes are the high energy electron carriers of the cell. They're the central catalyst of metabolism.
Leo says Gurr.
Oh my God, that's amazing. That's a mnemonic from med school.
Yeah. Leo says GER. Loss of electrons, oxidation, gain of electrons reduction.
When you say mitochondria, you know, I think people do, if they paid attention in high school, the powerhouses of the cells, right? That's how we used to call it, in high school science.
That, right? Because it's the powerhouse in terms of making ATP, but also there's reactions that occur partially in mitochondria that make lipids. You know, even you know, lipogenesis depends upon some, it depends on citrate synthase, which is in mitochondria, and then the carbon gets shipped out into cytosol again to make fat. So mitochondria are central to all sorts of biological processes, detoxifying oxygen-free radicals and so forth. And that we know that our metabolism declines in aging. We know that our repair capacity declines in aging. And the central finding is that in some types of cells, many types of cells, including hepatocytes, that the NAD system declines with aging. And also, I like to use the term comes under attack in conditions of metabolic stress. So in central and peripheral neurodegeneration, nerve NAD comes under attack. With high drinking, the NAD system comes under attack in the liver.
Drinking alcohol, you mean?
Yeah. In mouse models of obesity, we see hepatic NADPH decline. If you get a sunburn, then an enzyme called PARP1 uses NAD not to make ATP, but to build a structure that allows the DNA to be repaired, called poly-ADP ribose. And so many of these different metabolic stresses disturb the NAD system. And then, so if we take, you go back 20 years in the Brenner lab, 21 years ago in the Brenner lab, we discovered a molecule called nicotinamide riboside as a vitamin precursor of NAD. When you guys were in med school, you learned regular vitamin B3, nicotinamide, and nicotinic acid are the precursors of NAD, right? And that people 100 years ago that had very terrible diets would come down with pellagra. There were a million cases of pellagra in the southeastern United States. People were eating basically corn rations and lard. And by the way, the corn wasn't prepared with a pounding stone the way the Mesoamericans made it. And it was made with like steel blades that the evil seed company sold the seeds and sold the corn grinder to these subsistence farmers. And they got pellagra, right? And the pellagra was basically cured by fresh food. And then somebody named Conrad Elvehjem discovered two vitamins, nicotinamide and nicotinic acid, that were the key things that were missing in the terrible diet. That are present in fresh food. And so now, even if you only shop in the aisles in the grocery store where all the crackers and prepared food and things that have a lot of, you know, a wheat ingredient in it, you don't get pellagra because that's actually enriched with niacin, right? So we don't have people getting pellagra, but based upon a lot of the research that my lab and other groups were doing, where we're seeing in models of obesity and hearing loss and these kinds of metabolic stress, benefits of nicotinamide riboside, NR was basically developed as a new ingredient. So it has a generally regarded as safe notification from the FDA, as a new dietary ingredient notification from the FDA. It has dozens of safety trials, more than 100 registered clinical trials of NR. And there's actually 8 clinical trials that show that NR has anti-inflammatory activity in humans. So NR has use cases, but then the field was kind of co-opted by these kind of longevity people that were saying some stuff that's counterfactual, which is just a big word for made up story. And they were basically saying that the use case for NR or their favorite compound, NMN, which is NR with a phosphate group on it, is to activate your sirtuin genes. And if you activate your sirtuin genes, then you don't have to age, and you know you're not going to age, and aging is going to be optional. And so that's really not true. Like the three people involved in this podcast know how important sleep and diet and physical activity and mental activity and social engagement are, and not doing drugs that you're not prescribed, and not, you know, going crazy with alcohol and, you know, smoke and, you know, vaping and all that stuff. We are going to age. We want to age well, right? Mm-hmm. But there's kind of a counterfactual idea that if you take NMN and various other things that you won't age. I think that potentially you age better if you support your repair processes, and there is definitive proof that NR is anti-inflammatory in adults, which I think is great. But there's a use case for it, but I wouldn't say that people are going to live forever if they take it.
Where does resveratrol fit in?
Oh, so that's a total made-up story.
Wow.
So resveratrol was already kind of a dietary supplement, and it was part of this story about the so-called French paradox.
Yeah.
That, mm-hmm. Right. So the French,
the red wine,
they have just as much saturated fat as Americans, lots of butter in the diet, but they drink red wine, and maybe the red wine is why the average French, you know, Caucasian is in better health than the average American Caucasian. It probably has, probably a delta is like 12,000 steps a day or something, but, and it's probably multivariate, but there was a, you know, fantabulous sounding story that it's the red wine that they drink, and now somebody has purified the resveratrol from it, and that activates SIRT1, but the problem is it doesn't activate SIRT1. That's the first problem. Second is SIRT1 is not a longevity gene. Third problem is resveratrol is not orally available to humans. So the whole thing was completely.
That's a complete fabrication. Big scam.
Total. And so anyone that is selling resveratrol or still citing that stuff and saying that they show that it is a SIRT1 activator, that is a gigantic red flag. I have, you know, lengthy review articles taking that whole story apart.
Wow. What if you're from Harvard and you recommend? I'm just kidding. Anyway, okay. So resveratrol. What about, like, I get patients saying, "Can you prescribe me the injectable NAD plus and put it with my semaglutide? All these different things." And I'm like, "Whoa, my God! Hold on a second."
So injectable NAD plus doesn't make sense either, because, okay, so let's go back to the vitamins, coenzymes, and so forth, right? So what we said is that the four NAD coenzymes are the central catalysts of metabolism. And if I had a whiteboard behind me instead of this beautiful painting of goats climbing a tree, then you'd see that there's two phosphates in NAD and NADH, and there's actually three phosphates in NADP and NADPH. And compounds with phosphates don't get into cells. So NR is the biggest piece of NAD that can get into cells. Nicotinamide and nicotinic acid are even smaller. It's just like, you know, so our collagen, you know, production declines in aging, but that doesn't mean that if you take some cowhide, you know, or if you were able to make a gel of intact collagen and try to rub that on your face, that wouldn't do anything for you, because collagen is a huge molecule and collagen can't get into cells, right? So what people do in the topical skin area is they hydrolyze the collagen down to peptides, right? And amino acids get into cells. And then if you have good, you know, collagen protein synthesis, then the cells will take up the amino acids and build their own collagen, right? So it's very simple to make for cells to make NAD from NR. Not that much more complicated for most cells to make NAD from nicotinamide, and half of the cell types can make it from nicotinic acid as well. And so these are orally available vitamins. If somebody is injecting NAD, what they're actually experiencing is an inflammatory reaction. Apparently, it's quite painful. And because the innate immune system interprets NAD floating around as almost like a double-stranded RNA or one of these shapes, they're the innate pattern recognition receptors that recognize that as though there's some cell lysis. So the innate immune system gets agitated when it sees free-floating mitochondria, NAD, cell-free DNA, a bunch of things like that. So there actually is a product out that has been developed and safety tested that is an injectable NR, where there is a safety profile for it. And now there's the basis of doing experiments to see whether injectable NR has a stronger use case than oral NR for any indication. Like, it's well known that two of the advisors to ChromaDex, so a company called ChromaDex licensed my IP a number of years ago, and I'm an advisor for them.
So you're a shill.
No, I'm not a shill. I mean, that if I were shill, I would have said, take it because it'll activate your CERT one and you'll live forever, right?
And you get a bigger penis and stuff like that.
Rudy Tanzi and I both met with Bill Belichick and now you'll hate me even more as probably Detroit Lions fans or whatever. No,
we're Bears fans.
We're Chicago Bears fans. Okay.
Yeah. Oh,
so I'm from UNC. I went to UNC. He's going to be the new UNC coach.
Oh, so there whatever. You go. Yeah. Okay.
Although he has another secret for aging, as far as I can tell.
It must be the NR.
So,
Jesus Christ.
Full disclosure. I remarried a year ago, and my wife is a 18 and a half years younger than I am marathoner who ran a 3:23 Chicago marathon.
You didn't know where that was going.
Yeah,
so I was waiting for something, like, and then what's I was like, so, and I just invested in about $1,000 of NR.
I'll invest you know, 10.
But Bell, we did presentations for the Patriots, right? Because there you have guys that are just getting banged up on a Sunday, taking Monday off, and then having, you know, four or five hard workouts, and then doing it again the next weekend. And their training, you know, staff basically put everybody on, you know, Niagen NR. And it would be cases like that, or potentially addiction recovery or various kinds of acute situations where there may be important use cases for injectable NR. But for now, we know the oral stuff is safe. It's, you know, it's bioavailable. It's being tested for all sorts of interesting things, including fatty liver, mild cognitive impairment, and so forth. But we know that it is anti-inflammatory.
What about the NMN? What about the study we sent you about the NMN?
So I'm not sure if I read it, but NMN. I mean,
yeah, you know that. Yeah,
so
just...
NMN is a weird thing to develop because a chemist is going to the trouble of putting the phosphate group on. And then you ingest it, and then the phosphate group has to come off in order for it to be delivered as NR. There's no transporter for NMN. People published a paper claiming that there is, but we showed that that's actually just a sodium transporter. So NMN is being developed as a drug by a company called Metro Biotech. And the way the U.S. Supplement laws work, there's something called the DSHEA Act, D-S-H-E-A. Mm-hmm. D-S-H stands for dietary supplement. And the way the Dietary Supplement Health and Something Act works is that if something is introduced as a dietary ingredient first, it can subsequently be tested as a drug. So that was the case for niacin, right? It was available as a food and supplement. And then people said, hey, you know what? 2 grams of niacin, it gives people flushes, but it helps some people raise their HDL cholesterol, which is good, right? And so there was a attempt to turn niacin into an anti-dyslipidemia drug, into a lipids management drug. And similarly, NR is being tested as a drug. But if you first test something as a drug, then you cannot introduce it as a supplement.
Right.
Because then we'd have all sorts of failed drugs, you know, that people are popping. So what happened with the NMN is that literally a Harvard faculty member put in a very widely read book that they take 1 gram of NMN per day and that it activates their sirtuins and they take resveratrol and a bunch of other things that don't really make sense. And it just created a global demand for it. And then 2 things happened simultaneously. One is there was a drug development program going where FDA was notified that clinical trials had started for NMN safety and in various medical indications. And then some other companies, literally from Mongolia, is a fun fact, a company from Inner Mongolia, wrote to FDA to try to get a new dietary ingredient notification for NMN supplement. At one point, they had a letter from FDA saying that it could be used as a supplement. Then FDA realized that Metro Biotech is turning NMN into a drug. And so now in the United States, NMN can't legally be sold as a drug. Can't be legally sold as anything.
Wow.
Because it's being clinically tested by the drug company and it's illegal as a supplement.
So for what disease state, though? NMN,
yeah, what do you use it
what's
for?
What's it being studied for? Because I think one of the takeaways I'm getting from you is that there may be something to some of this, but more for like real clinical indications, which again gets like into my world when people talk about metformin and even hormone therapy and all this stuff. It's about those with disease. We already know that nutrition, exercise, sleep, stress reduction, all that stuff is so critically important.
Yeah.
And that's the real longevity secret, right?
Right.
And avoiding alcohol and smoking and all that stuff. The metformin deal, I'm very skeptical about. We can have a whole thing on that because the only data that show any benefit in humans is like with those with pretty significant disease, diabetes, and, you know, maybe colorectal cancer prevention. Yeah, there's some subtle things. Mm-hmm. But for this, you know, so you talked about NR with the NFL football players. I don't know. Maybe that makes me think maybe we should consider because we beat ourselves up pretty bad over all the years. But what are these things truly being looked into? I mean, you mentioned fatty liver. So again, that gets into our area of obesity-related metabolic disease. So we want to help people prevent that, not even get to that point where they might benefit from drugs or supplements.
Yeah.
But where's the direction headed that you've kind of alluded to?
Well, it's basically when we see an animal system in which NAD comes under attack and there's... In many cases, there's actually induced expression of the nicotinamide riboside kinase genes. So the most amazing one is in heart failure. So in heart failure, I was, you know, minding my own business in like 2017, and I get a out of the blue email from Paris. And there's a molecular biologist there named... Matthias Merkse knocks out his favorite transcription factor in the heart, in a mouse heart, and he gets dilated cardiomyopathy, okay, in all of the mice. By like 3 months, all the mice are dead of heart failure. And but 1 month, which is 2 months before they're dead, the most highly induced gene is nicotinamide riboside kinase 2. So this French molecular biologist, you know, writes me an email and says, what is nicotinamide riboside kinase 2? I said, well, that's a fascinating result. we need to see what's happening to NAD in the failing heart. Turns out in the failing heart, NAD is plummeting. And this gene, one of the genes that I discovered, is spiking up. And then when we supplemented those mice with NR, it, you know, preserved the rejection fraction, protected their fraction shortening, and like six other parameters that I would have to be a cardiologist to fully understand. So now there's lots of clinical trials of NR for heart failure and inflammation around heart failure. There's many, many trials around inflammation. There's a number of trials for neuroinflammatory, neurodegenerative conditions. Wound repair is another hot area. And so I'm not quite sure what they're testing NMN for, but I know that NR is being tested in a lot of really interesting, you know, diseases. And since it has a good safety profile, you know, it may turn into medicine. As for now, it says on the bottle, not intended to treat a disease or condition, because it is a supplement, right? But, you know, in the fullness of time, there may actually be medical indications. I think that there are a fair number of docs that, you know, also women's health docs, that there's kind of a lore about fertility. We did a trial, you know, in mice and rats that showed that new mother mice and rats that are given NR produce a lot more milk, and the neurodevelopment of their offspring is advanced, you know, if the mother is basically supplemented with NR. We found that the new mother mouse's liver has a depressed NAD system, and that oral NR basically allows that liver to mobilize, you know, protein, fat, and carbohydrate, and also NAD coenzymes better to the lactation program.
Wow. So is there a chance that the average relatively healthy person who eats a relatively whole food, minimally processed diet, but even the processed foods are enriched, like you said, with niacin and different vitamins, getting fruit and vegetables, nuts and seeds, quality proteins, do you think there's potential benefit for, let's say, NR? Because it sounds like the other stuff is pretty much BS. But
there's much more of a safety dossier and a, you know, results dossier with NR than with NMN.
Do you think there's any benefit?
Yeah, I think that there is a use case. So when you go, if your guys are going through airports today, you know, or classrooms, or, you know, waiting rooms, you know, this time of year, you know, 5, 10, 20% of the people may have a flu or COVID or something like that. We think that NR promotes some resistance to that through the innate immune system. We know that double-stranded RNA is one of the things that causes innate cells to churn NAD and to be more susceptible to infection. And there's actually clinical trials showing that, you know, vitamin cocktails, including NR as a key ingredient, accelerate time to recovery from COVID. So I think that there are a lot of use cases for NR.
What about just for those of us who worked out a lot, ate well, but also got beat up in wrestling and football during most of our youth and into our young adult years?
Yeah, I mean, it may assist in athletic recovery. You know, that's kind of out there in the hacker space, mm-hmm. right? And there's things that we've learned from the hacker space. Like, one of the things I always tell people, was it 2006 when Floyd Landis was busted on the Tour de France?
It's been a while.
Oh my God, yeah. That's
2006.
That's 20 years ago, almost.
So, and if you would take it, if you were teaching hormone function in 2006, and somebody raised their hand, and they asked you, why do athletes juice, right? You'd say, well, they take testosterone. Testosterone is an anabolic steroid, and they take it over weeks and months of physical resistance training in order to build more muscles, right? But that's not what Floyd Landis did.
Right. EPO.
Floyd Landis was out on the course, like 2 miles behind the leaders, with bone on bone pain, and took a huge shot of testosterone so that he could beat himself up the following day on the course, right?
For recovery purposes.
Right. And so it was roid rage, right?
Wow.
So the people that were juicing knew about roid rage. They knew about the immediate early effects of testosterone, that you're just going to, something is going to happen in your brain where you won't feel pain. And that's what he was doing. Now that's in textbooks, that we know there's immediate early neurotropic effects of testosterone. So there are things that, you know, people in gyms, you know, and there's a lot of use of NR in physical activity recovery. But to my knowledge, there's not a placebo controlled trial saying that, you know, you can maintain your weight training better.
So for longevity purposes, all these people asking for all these different supplements, whether they're injectable, NAD, NM, whatever, other than maybe NR, but that's not longevity for longevity purposes. The gist is save your money. Is that right? Is that what you're saying?
The gist is no one, if anybody claims that they're have a longevity indication, they're pretty much lying to you, right? Because you can't do a trial. So, you know, you can look at biomarkers and you try 20 different age tests and then choose the age tests that support your thesis, right? So that's not legit, you know? And I think that, you know, NR is basically a wellness product that is being tested in a very interesting, you know, medical space and is getting to the point where you can pretty much make anti-inflammatory claims. And, you know, that may help people live better. If it helps them stick to a physical activity program, then it's great for them. And it's not, you know, it's not harmful. But I certainly think that you must be, since you guys are docs who do a podcast, you're aware of something called podcast disease, right?
Yeah, where people want to hear about it.
Yeah, I mean, people will get the latest thing that's on Instagram, and they say, oh, I have to be taking this pill or this shot or delaying my coffee or something like that. And, you know, that's just not evidence-based. And you can't make claims based upon, you know, that type of anecdote.
That's what they do, though.
I was just looking it up.
Should we drop name our normal one that we always do? He's a longevity guy.
Well, there's Peter Attia.
Yeah, we always mention him every podcast because we always have to debunk his stuff.
He's more legit than an Andrew Huberman who gets
so
into...
I haven't read, you know, Attia's book, but I'm always sent, you know, clips and you know, for the most part, I think what he's saying is what you're saying, that, you know, diet, physical activity are really important. I don't know if he's prescribing things off label.
Yeah, well, he used to rapamycin,
metformin, that type of thing.
He used to promote all sorts of stuff. I think he's walked back some of it, like the metformin thing, because that's kind of come back around. He does. We get on his butt a lot because he gets paid a lot of money from the continuous glucose monitor companies, and he tells everyone they have to have glucose monitors, which of course
you don't.
You don't. No, nobody needs that unless they have maybe pre-diabetes and then the more advanced diabetes. But he does. You know, but he pushes nutrition, exercise, and medications for cholesterol. And although it's kind of ironic, he also kind of bashes the GLPs that have very well-established cardiovascular
benefits, like
reduction in heart attack, strokes, and stuff. So that kind of, I don't know why he does that, but yet promotes
kind of
statins.
Weird.
The one thing I got really upset about with him, he was on this show with the guy that plays Thor. I always call
Hemsworth.
Him Thor. Yeah, Hemsworth. And he literally made the claim that sauna use reduces cardiovascular events more than any drug we have available. And I was like, oh my God, what is this? And I went into all the literature and it has these like real vague observational data from Finland, I think.
Not ownership.
Right. Oh God, I was so upset. So anyways, that's why we kind of dog him. But yes, he does. He at least does promote the basics of, you know, nutrition, exercise, sleep, stress reduction, which it always ends up being the bottom line. It's like that has never changed.
That's majoring in the majors, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So nobody, like, if you're listening to this and you, like, I could Google right now, NAD plus injections, and you're going to see a lot of these peptide places who are doing compounded semaglutide, tirzepatide.
It's not safe.
All sorts of stuff. Then they add in the NAD with the semaglutide.
Money.
Don't buy into that. We do want to do a longer, more specifically longevity stuff because you debunk a lot of this stuff on Twitter. I appreciate it because it's big money, a lot of money. Because if you can help people claim to help people live longer, people are going to pay obviously hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to do it.
Ironically, they don't want to do the things that are well established all the time, though. And that includes the medicines that we have, by the way. Yeah, that's what drives me insane.
Probably a huge problem
in
those people, right? Because you start taking all sorts of things. Like, it's really funny when people say, oh, yeah, I'm going to take rapamycin. And then, you know, and then they have their other stack that has leucine in it. It's like, okay, so what are you trying to do? Because leucine is activating your mTOR for protein synthesis. Which actually makes a little bit of sense because you're trying to maintain your skeletal muscle mass. And then you're taking, you know, rapamycin, which is inhibiting. So
that happens a lot in the overlap of wellness and medicine and,
Very good. Well, thanks for joining us this morning. My brother has got to go on a vacation.
Yeah, but how much NR do I start taking?
Yeah, how much and how much money per bottle do you get from my brother getting his NR? We want to know.
So I'm 100% employee of City of Hope. I'm an academic scientist. I run a research lab. I am an advisor to ChromaDex. And so, you know, I disclose my financial interest in it. But I think it's been an amazing thing that we discovered this pathway in yeast initially. We found the same pathway in human. And then we found all these, you know, examples in not only in mouse medicine, but in human medicine. Like, for example, in human heart failure, cardiac NAD goes down and nicotinamide riboside kinase 2 comes up just like in a mouse. So it's kind of an amazing thing for me that there is an aspect of my lab that has had the potential to improve human health.
Yeah, I love it. That'll be exciting to see down the road. Really cool.
All right. And people can find you on Twitter, Dr.
Charles M. Brenner.
Charles M. Brenner.
Twitter, Blue Sky as well.
Blue Sky as well. And we'll be sure to get some of your research papers in the links in our bio. And then we'll have you back on for a little bit more of a fun longevity discussion.
Our lab is working on rare disease as well. I'll tell you about the rare disease.
Oh, cool. Thank you. That's awesome.
Thanks so much for coming on. Happy New Year, everybody. Here's our outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.